So if I could now throw the floor open for questions, and if you'd just like to move to the microphone, state your name and shamelessly your organisation, that would be fantastic.
Thank you. Philip Isaacs from Flack & Kurtz and InnerVision Australia. Firstly, congratulations, Ross, for taking up the running from a very famous Australian from the Netherlands, Dick Dusseldorf, who put the company on the map because he cared about the mix between corporates and the community, which is why Lendlease, I think, was such an extraordinary success in the 50s and continues to this day. Now, listening to what you had to say, it seems to me that there are, you used the word zealots, there are probably three forces at play on this subject at the moment, and I think we need a fourth, headed up by yourself, probably. One group, of course, are the environmentalists, some of whom are zealots, some of whom are extremely negative on every subject without having decisions on anything. They're just generally negative about anything anyone wants to do. The other extreme, you've got the sort of resource-type people who have a lot to lose from some of the initiatives which we take. In the middle of that, you've got government trying to make decisions and generally sitting on the fence and waiting. It seems to me that we need more people such as yourself who will speak with authority and have the solutions as distinct from just the complaints to present some good news stories to government so that they really do listen. There are a lot of things been happening in politics recently in water and other subjects where people are starting to pay attention. But it does seem to me that we need a force that is not seen as zealots, but are seen as constructive people with a track record to convince the politicians that, in fact, there is something to pay attention to. I'd be interested whether you think that movement, which may well be constituted out of the Green Building Council and the Property Council, but any other group you can think of, maybe a collective corporate group, maybe it's CEDA, I don't know. But it seems to me that a balanced point of view needs to be presented to government rather than a zealot's point of view or an extreme resource point of view. I'd be interested to see where you think some middle road politics would be useful.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, and it's been a topic we've been debating. And the risk is I don't think we need another industry council in Australia. I mean, I struggle to get my mind around all the ones that we've got right now. And we were talking to Bjorn Stikston, who's the head of the World Sustainable Building Council or Business Council. And he was out here wondering whether he should set up an arm in Australia, and we sort of advocated strongly all the people that are involved in that around the world from Australia that he shouldn't. The trick, in my view, is how do we actually get the Business Council or CEDA or someone to take a broader business, because the Property Council's good, but it only represents the property industry. You've actually got to step up to a holistic business forum. So we've got to get the Business Council of Australia or someone like that to engage. I'd really be concerned about setting up yet another industry body in the country. We struggle to represent ourselves on the ones that are there now, let alone adding another one. So that's, I agree, but we've got to find a way to get one of the generic business bodies to take up the challenge.
Ross, most interested in your ADI project, Hugh Ralston, Warren Centre for Advanced Engineering, initiator of the Sustainable Transport and Sustainable Cities Project, chair of its steering committee throughout. Most interested in the ADI project, and I would just like to talk about three things there and ask for your comment. First of all, mixed-use development. Two, the principle of planning in order to reduce the need to travel. And three, what attention did you apply to transport?
Hate local audiences, they know too much. So I think your three questions were mixed. A view on mixed use development,
yep.
Then
travel.
And then what attention did you pay to transport? And transport. Well, let me get the last question, what attention do we pay to transport? I can't give you an explicit answer on that. I just don't know the answer to exactly. We would have obviously had to have done a lot of transport studies and worked through it. I just can't tell you off the top of my head what explicitly we did. In terms of the other two, I can give you a philosophical answer to that because we approached this many, many times. I think mixed use is essential in big community developments. Lendlease has put itself on a setting where we only do larger community developments because we don't believe when you just do small infill developments you can actually achieve a sustainable outcome. You've actually got to bring to bear industry, services and a lot of holistic uses to make a community ultimately work. So therefore we've put ourselves on a setting around the world where we're actively only looking for the larger, bigger community projects where we can actually deliver what we believe are sustainable outcomes. Travel, I think, is very important. I think, therefore, it sort of follows on from what I just said. That means that a lot of people are working in those communities and they're not necessarily travelling long distances to actually commute to the city because there's enough industry and commerce and sustainable activities, for want of a better word, in that community. Ultimately, cities obviously need hubs and number of hubs, but if everyone's going to get into the CBD every day, that doesn't work either.
David Willington, shamelessly, from Deloitte. One of the stories you told was the tipping point for you almost, the point where you had that meeting with the BP executive and he told you that you needed to change your ways. You've said that Australia's not particularly sustainable. Do you see for global executives that it's going to take one moment like that for them to realise, or do you think it's just going to come naturally? How is it going to change?
It's a good question. I mean, if I'd likened Lendlease, I mean, we were getting serious, you know, after things like St. Mary's and other projects, you know, we've had our issues and we actually had to start getting focused on it in the project teams. But I'd have to say, as an organisation, we talk the talk but not walk it. And it wasn't until that particular BP incident where we suddenly had to step back and say, gee whiz, a lot of our client base is changing and they're deadly serious about it. And it was a real sort of the light bulb came on. And it wasn't just a safety issue. It was, you could suddenly say, well, we're actually a bit hypocritical here. Look at our offices. On one hand, you are espousing certain things to your customer base and on your projects, but then you're actually living a very different life as an organisation. And when I started bumping off organisations that were really getting it, you thought, whoa, we're really going to get behind the eight ball if we're not careful. And it came from another direction too. It was a safety issue again. We were looking to work for Intel and we put the presentation, told how good we were, and they said, well, no, you're not. They went out and audited behind our back three or four of our sites and said, you know, great speech. You're like most of the other companies that pitch at us. You're full of it. And all these things, it wasn't just BP. There was about five or six instances and it was really all coming out of overseas where there's more companies overseas that are really changing their values than you see in Australia, and that's what really drove it. And I don't know. I mean, I'm here speaking because hopefully I can impart, get people thinking, but I can't tell whether people have to get a slap around the head or not. We needed it, so.
Ross Murray-Dearburg from Freehills, also unashamedly. It seems to me that you're talking about sustainability to companies within the major economies of the world where development and redevelopment is a recognised benefit for people. How do you see the role of sustainability in emerging, especially in the emerging economy, especially in North Asia, etc.? How do you see them recognising the value of sustainability?
It's a constant dilemma. One of the things I said in here is that it's driving how we work and who and where we work. And our approach has been that where we can work safely or sustainably in any economy we will, but we have to be able to do that. It doesn't mean that we're uniformly as perfect all around the world. And I always look for a couple of things. We can't be doing anything reckless, putting people at risk or damaging the environment or doing something that really is against our values. But if we're actually improving the market we're in and actually making progress, it's worth being there. And it's not just developing economies. New York's probably one of the toughest places. The safety there's appalling. It's worse than China. It's worse than most of Asia. But we're actually making impacts and inroads, so we're staying with it. But in India, for instance, we pulled out of India, working for local companies there because we just couldn't get them to engage on safety with us. So we actually stopped working. So we only go back into India now when we work with clients that will actually let us be safe, and we parachute in and we'll do the work and then we'll come out again. Because it was just, we weren't making any impacts. People wouldn't work with us, so we just were getting nowhere. So we said, no, can't do it, so we pulled back. But it's always tough. And interestingly, people always talk about China, and we actually found that China, actually, we can do stuff really safely there if you get the right client and the right setup. So it's actually been quite a surprise, that.
Ross, David Hughes, Crown Projects. We're doing a number of major refurbishment projects for government in New South Wales. We find that the lack of public policy driving the ESD standard worrying. Federally, they're quite certainly high office standards. What do you find globally is a driver? You've spoken today about a lot of private relationships driving sustainability. What's the relationship between international governments and the private sector?
Yeah. Look, I think it varies. And one of the frustrations, and I've said this at other forums I've been at, that it seems every city around the world wants to relearn all the lessons around this sustainable issues again and again and again. And one of the places that's probably most aggressively dealing, if you just say worker accommodation or social accommodation, is London. And what you see is that it's got so chronic in London that they have to, as I said, mandate 50% of every development requires that it forces you to have tools in your kit bag to deal with that. And you could see that cities around the world could absolutely learn as they're growing and becoming bigger from all those lessons, but they just can't seem to get themselves organised to do so. So it's not just private. We find that different political settings, different government settings are really much, some are more progressed, some out of need, some out of political crisis, and you can bring those insights to bear. But I don't see much propensity for people to learn off past mistakes. I think private enterprise seems to be able to translate and use it for competitive advantage, but government seems to quickly get embroiled in political agendas and is incapable of sort of stepping back and taking a 10-year, 15-year view. And I don't want it to sound too cynical. It's not all as bad as that, but it can get quite frustrating when you operate in different places with different political agendas in that respect. So while that occurs, it's actually a good competitive advantage for us, albeit it's not necessarily the right answer for civilization, for want of a better word.